the rest of the story. William Laud, L-A-U-D, Archbishop of Canterbury, looked like the devil himself. That is, if Van Dyck's famous portrait of him, dated 1633, is as accurate as it is detailed. Anyway, it would hardly have taken oil and canvas to characterize Archbishop Laud as the devil, at least as far as 17th century Calvinists were concerned. Laud despised them. You remember Edward Winslow, the founder of Plymouth Colony in America, one of the original Mayflower pilgrims, most beloved among them. It's his portrait, which is proudly displayed in the gallery of the Pilgrim Society, the only surviving authentic likeness of any of the Mayflower voyagers. Well, in 1635, Edward Winslow stepped down as Plymouth's governor for 1 year to return to England with reports and requests. And upon learning of this historic visit, Winslow's old nemesis, Archbishop Laud, decided to be rid of him once and for all. The Archbishop did not have Winslow arrested exactly, but he officially summoned him. And insofar as the law of England and the law of the church were then considered one, the charge might as well have been treason. "I understand," Laud said, "that something sacred has been removed from the churches of Plymouth Colony." Now, Winslow responded that the churches of Plymouth Colony were small ones, and there was no room in them for anything corrupt. "You are a scholar of God's word," he told the Archbishop. "So where does it say in the Bible that the ministry must be infected with such superstition?" Well, for long moments, the two men of destiny stared at each other. Until at last, quietly seething, the Archbishop of Canterbury was compelled to concur, and Edward Winslow was permitted to go. It may have seemed a minor setback to Archbishop Laud at the time, but it was the beginning of an end so bitter, of a fall from grace so profound, that 5 years later, for abuses of ecclesiastical power amounting to high treason, he would be impeached, he would be imprisoned in the Tower of London, and 5 years after that, he would have to petition Parliament to execute him, please, with an axe, because the alternative they had in mind was infinitely more brutal. So, once upon a less enlightened time, there were self-described defenders of the gospel. Defenders of the gospel, like Archbishop Laud, who not only permitted but encouraged a certain superstitious ritual to be performed in church, and who tried to forbid its practice in any other place. But then along came the likes of Martin Luther, who called it a secular and an outward thing. Plymouth Puritans called it exploitation and corruption, and they outright banished it from their churches. Today's cheerleaders of the ideas and the ideals of our forefathers often haven't the slightest notion what they are cheering. Because, you see, in 17th century New England, the courts would have angrily declared it null and void if a man and woman had been bold enough, stupid enough, sacrilegious enough, ever, to be married by a minister. Now you know the rest of the story.